listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're 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 listening to Skid Row Studios.
We're listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
You please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio Radio with Jake Belcher and Brant Thoman,
the kings of internet radio.
You are right on time for another scintillating episode of Grand Theft Audio Radio. This is Jake Belcher.
And I'm Brant Thoman, live in downtown Los Angeles at the beautiful Skid Row Studios.
It is beautiful. We say that all the time, but it is.
It's a nice place.
It's very nice.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, we got a killer show for you folks today. Today we have live in studio. We can't believe that we scored this one. Ladies and gentlemen, we have with us Michael Gelbart.
Absolutely.
That's going to be badass. We've had him before. Love getting him in. Then we have an even bigger surprise. Can't believe we got this one either. Mr. Carl Kozlowski will be joining us as
well. Definitely is a bigger
surprise. It's bigger. Like Kozlowski is big. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's not small. No, no, no.
Stupid Carl Kozlowski. And then...
Who we love.
Who do we love?
Big Carl Kozlowski.
Everybody loves Carl.
Everybody loves Carl.
Everybody loves Carl. They should do a show that's like everybody loves some name.
Right. I think someone did.
They did?
Yes.
I've seen Everybody Hates Chris.
Right, but I believe Everybody Loves Raymond.
Ah, yeah, Everybody Loves Raymond. I remember that show.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Awesome show.
Still out there in syndication land.
It'd be pretty bad if we can get someone in here from that show. I mean, that would be pretty
sweet. It would be pretty awesome. Who would you like to have? Garrett would be cool, yeah. I guess, but he's taller than me, and people who are taller than me scare me, so... I don't know.
You're not used to that, so I can't.
I'm not used to
that.
You know, I know people are used to me being the tallest person around, but when somebody towers over me, it's like, get away from me. You scare me.
You're freaking me out, man.
Yeah. I'm not used to being not top dog. So not Garrett. And Romano, man, he just always sounds so nasally and everybody loves him, so he goes on everybody else's show. I don't think he'd do our show.
It's very possible, though we are trying to work on getting him in here for a separate thing.
Ooh.
So let's not
disparage great. Ray. I'm not disparaging Ray at all.
But it would be awesome if we can get the mother, Doris Robertson.
That would be awesome.
That'd be badass. In fact, we actually do have her in studio today.
Yes, she will be here at our 10 o'clock hour.
Yeah, she's coming in to talk about a charity event that is going on this weekend. And
With most of those names that we mentioned, they will be hosting and co-hosting and participating in this comedy event that they're going to be hosting this coming Saturday.
It is a Laugh for a Cause at the 10th Annual Night of Comedy. It's benefiting children affected by AIDS and another organization called Keep a Child Alive. The thing I like about this organization is what they are there to help are children who have been orphaned by parents who have died of AIDS. It's not something that you hear about very often.
Right. They're affected by AIDS in different ways as well.
Yeah. So can't wait to get her in here to talk about that. And I might try to work in a little bit of a Love Boat, Grandma's Boy, Christmas Vacation type of question or two as well. Because that's just what we do.
Grandma's Boy is one of my favorite comedies from the Happy Madison production company.
Dude, it's a hilarious film. Absolutely love it.
Nick Swartzen and Jonah Hill both have pretty decent roles in there, especially Swartzen, but Jonah Hill. And a lot of other, like, really funny comedians and actors. And it was just a fun movie, period. And every time I try to tell people about it, they always get grossed out about Swartzen and the mother from the Partridge Family. I can't think of her name. And there's a makeout scene between them. And it really isn't like
it's not disturbing. Awful.
It's not that disturbing. I mean, you say, okay, it's a younger guy kissing an older woman. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's right. It's not that big a deal.
Right.
It's but funny.
It is funny. But for some reason, there were a couple of specific dudes that I remember talking to and telling, this is such a funny movie. You should totally check it out. And they were like, no, I just can't do that. It's just that just creeps me out. It's like,
ridiculous.
Dude, not every woman has to be young and nubile for you, dude. It's just not going to happen. You're getting older and you're continuing. It's, you know, he's the mid-30s guy who's continuing to look at 18 and 19-year-old girls as if he has a shot.
One of my best friends is just like that. I'm not going to use his name on here, and he's never been mentioned on here, so it won't link back to him. But, you know, we're 38 years old, both of us, and so is he. We same class as us. And he only wants to date, like, 20-year-olds, like, maybe 21. I mean, like, that's all he really goes for. I finally had to convince him yesterday that, dude, you're like totally looking for the wrong thing. Here's what you want. What you want is a 35-year-old chick that is fucking hot as hell that works out all the time. Because he's all, yeah, but these girls, like, their bodies are so tight and young and nice. And I'm like, yeah, but that shit goes away. It's like, what is it you're trying to, you're just trying for, like, short-term relationships? Because the whole thing is, like, he wants to find his long-term girl.
Right. So he thinks he's going to find that in a 20-year-old who then when she's 35 and he's 50, she's not going to look like a 20-year-old anymore.
No, she sure isn't.
And you're going to hope that she might be the type that continues to go and work out.
And young chicks have they don't have to stay hot. I mean, they just are hot. They don't have to go out and work out and put things together. Like, you want one that has figured out that, yeah, I'm going to work out because that's what he's into. And like, that's not what everybody's into. Not everybody needs somebody that's a hard body workout person mm-hmm. all the time. But if that's what you need, then find someone who is already doing that.
Right.
That has already figured out that that's something that they enjoy in their life.
Well, I've always gone by a rule of how old a person I should date should be. And the way I came up with this was you take your age at 18, you cut that in half, and then you add 9 years. So at 18, I shouldn't be dating anyone under the age of 18. That's just probably good common practice so that you don't get yourself in any trouble for underage sex. But as you grow older, the gap widens. So now at 38, you cut that in half. You're at 19. You add 9 years. So technically a 28-year-old. 27, 28, right in that range, falls into my ideal age range. And then a couple of years beyond if I'm looking for an older woman. But
not one who's like your age. Like if she's your age, does that mean that she's an older woman?
No. That's fine too. I'm saying the age range, the age range that I can date within, that I'm comfortable with, widens as I get older. So when I'm 50, I can be dating a 34-year-old. So, I mean, that's just the way I kind of rule by how I'm going to date. I'm not going to go after a 23-year-old. It's just not going to happen. It's just...
I'm like talking to him, like, what do you talk to them about?
Exactly. There's nothing to talk about. We share no common, maybe a song or two or a band that we like.
That is current right now. Because it can't be something that is from a couple of years ago because she was 12 years old then or something.
Exactly. It's not when I was in high school. I can't expect that.
Yeah. So I mean, it's damn silly of this guy.
Yeah. So, but awesome. Doris Roberts in at the 10 o'clock hour.
Plus, also on our breaks today, we're going to be kind of gearing ourselves up here for one of the events that comes to town in a few weeks. Action on Film Festival.
Awesome. With Del Weston,
and
friend of the show.
This year they have switched themselves from Pasadena to Monrovia.
Oh.
Still going to make it out there for as many of them as we can. So we're going to air a classic interview during our breaks today with Mike Donis, Aaron Sang, and Marsha Cornier, all about one of their films here a couple of years ago called Blue Seal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that tomorrow we'll bring in some Sandy Kellerman. We'll bring in some different ones that we've had from those folks over the next couple of days. And that should be a good way to go through some of our breaks. They're funny interviews.
Yeah, they are. So, that was a fun time when we got to have those people in. And we look forward to having them with the upcoming film festival coming up.
Yeah, should be badass. Okay, so let's kick off with today's holidays.
Yay.
Both of them are kind of downers.
Okay. Well, middle of the week. It's a Wednesday.
Yes, that happens, you know. Today is World Multiple Sclerosis Day.
Mm-hmm. MS.
Yeah. So I guess you should just, be happy that you don't have it if you don't. And try to donate a dollar to Jerry's Kids or something.
Right.
If you can do that.
That's muscular dystrophy.
Well, I don't know. Give it to Jerry's Kids anyways.
Yeah. Are they his kids anymore?
No, I think they still use him in marketing, but he's not actually part of.
He's not hosting it anymore.
The telethon anymore. I think he wants to, but they do not want him back.
Right. They got Sechrest or somebody.
Probably.
He does
everything else.
His ass is everywhere.
Today is also National Senior Health and Fitness Day.
Well, that's not so much of a downer. Hey, seniors, if you're listening, get up off the computer when you're done listening to us and go out and be healthy and be fit.
Okay, if you're like Jack LaLanne or something, then that's not too big of a downer. But for the most part, have you ever watched like a senior workout video?
Not a video. No, I've never actively tried to watch that. I've seen seniors work out. Like I'll go you when I used to go to a gym and they'd have like the seniors in the pool, which is always just fun. The running in place and paddling with your hands, and that is senior physical fitness now.
My grandparents had a couple of these videos.
Uh huh.
They were it was very hard to watch them when they were in the room because they're just fucking hilarious. It's like okay, now sit down in your chair and stand up again. Sit down in your chair, stand up again. I'm like, wow, this is not a hard workout.
It's hard for them. They probably work up a little bit of a sweat.
Yeah. Now, if this is too hard for you, just sit down and wait. Like, okay. Now, okay. If you're good again, then stand up and sit down again.
You would think that they would say, now, if you've grown tired, push the pause button. If you know which one that is, and then they would show you, it looks like this with two bars next to it, just so people know. You might find it on the remote, or you may have to get up again, walk over, and push the pause button, and then take a break.
Or call your grandchild in. I bet they can pause it.
They know what every button does.
That they do. Kids are amazing that way. It is pretty awesome. Okay, so we got a couple of genuine news stories today.
Genuine. None of that fake shit.
Dude, this one really, really pisses me off. Here in the state of California, we've been taking in extra money for people who want memorial license plates that have been emblazoned with the words, "We will never forget."
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is about putting money towards anti-terrorism issues, trying to help the children of families that died in 9/11. And I just got a text from our guest. He is parking right now.
Awesome.
And they've brought in millions and millions of dollars, about $15 million since they have started this campaign. And it turns out that none of the money is going towards what it was intended to.
Let me guess. Our state has decided to use that to kind of take care of our own financial bullshit.
Word, man. Jerry Brown and Arnold Schwarzenegger have both raided this fund. And they are using it to pay for other things, which, okay, great. I understand we have to pay for other things. But if you're specifically taking money for 9/11 victims and for our safety, then that money should go to that.
Yeah. And where is it in our state's constitution that says that their governors can go after what are supposed to be charitable funds? I mean, these people are paying extra. They want the nice license plate that says we will never forget or we will always remember. Which one was it?
The actual term on it is... we will never forget.
We will never forget. And with the thought that, okay, that money's going to go to help the people who were affected by this. Or at the very least, go to a charity that's going to help out other people from other disasters. It shouldn't, no point. Did any of the money ever make it to?
A tiny bit.
Of the $15 million that it raised,
yes.
How much actually made it to the 9/11 charity?
They think about 7%.
Wow, we maybe $1 million.
Maybe. No, not even. I mean, just under that. That's awful. This whole thing was also put together to make a California Memorial Scholarship Program to be able to help kids of 9/11 victims be able to go to college. Not a dime has gone to that. They cut that program 7 years ago, but they're still touting it as the number one reason to buy into this program.
So they're advertising something that you're actually not going to be doing.
That's right.
We can't really do anything. Can any court do anything about this is what I'm curious now. It's like, I mean, is a federal investigator going to come out and say, well, wait a second. You have money that you've been taking from your own citizens, and you're using it for projects within your state, but that is not what this money was deemed for. You guys deemed it for something else, and now you're defrauding your own citizenry in trying to keep them to continue buying these license plates.
Shysters and shenanigans. I mean, these things should not be being paid for by this. I mean, we're paying for things like printing costs on how to properly feed your livestock. I mean, that has nothing to do with...
That's what libraries are for. That's what Google and Wikipedia and the internet are for.
I mean, there's a thing on hiring industrial hygienists to go around the country, around the state, and look at worker health, to establish an online food monitoring database and implement a variety of, like, worker safety programs. That's what they spent $3.7 million on.
This is out of that fund.
Out of that fund, yep.
Doesn't seem like this is stuff we should be spending the money on.
No, it doesn't even seem. It doesn't even sound like they're saving like a school, or they are saving some type of arts program, or something that. Okay, great. You know, we have to figure out some way of paying for it. This is not what's happening here.
If there really is a concern with worker health, the workers will come to you and tell you. Tell them that you're interested in talking to people and what they think of their worker health.
They created something called the California Emergency Management Agency, where they gave $2 million for general operations, like administrative costs, buying and fueling cars, hiring people from 2007 to 2009 to coordinate 5 so-called fusion centers where other people could come and learn about electric cars and how much more beneficial they are to the state. Okay. Sickening. I mean, I'm
getting more and more angry at this now.
Yeah, me too, man.
I mean, this is a paltry sum compared to what our deficit is here in the state as it is. We're looking at $16 billion. This is $15 million. But it's just another example of our state government and its ineffectiveness to actually govern and to do what they're actually being paid to do.
It's just like the quote here from the end is this person from Austin, Texas. It says, "That's California. It's kind of a given these days. Nothing is spent on what it's supposed to be spent on." And unfortunately, that is all too true.
Yep. The whole thing with Prop 29 coming up in the upcoming election. It's just like they say that the money's going to go to help fund cancer research, but not here in the state, per se. We may send some of that money out of the country or out of the state to another state to help them research. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. If you're going to tax me, use the money here. Do not send it away.
I mean, that's
anybody.
What it's supposed to do.
Right. That's what it's supposed to do. But
it's not.
No.
I mean, this is another Rob Reiner-backed initiative.
And yep.
That guy is...
he hates smokers.
World-class piece of crap. I would like to punch him in the belly. Absolutely pisses me off. Another thing that... this doesn't piss me off as much, but I can totally see where it would make other people very angry. They have now cut back on the length of time that you can be on unemployment. Right now, it has been up to 99 weeks for quite a long time.
How many weeks did they take away?
Now they're cutting off 5 months' worth of benefits.
So 20 weeks. So you're down to 79. About 79 weeks of unemployment now. So a little. You have a year and a half, basically.
Yeah. Which is still, I mean, it's a decent amount of time to try to put everything together.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get onto a program and it's supposed to last a certain amount of time and you're told that it's going to last that amount of time and you're given your extensions and you're told that it's going to be there for you, for them to just pull it out, pull the rug out from beneath people's feet, because there's people who are within that 20-week end time now that they just stopped.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask. Is, are the people who were already approved for the 99 weeks there, and then from this point on, anyone who files will only be able
instant.
So it's instant. So anyone, even so, if you're at week 89 and you're expecting
things for 10
more weeks of unemployment, that they've just cut that off. They basically have just told you, well, we can't give you any more.
Yeah, I mean, same thing if you're at 70.
Without even notifying.
No notification at all. No, hey, we're going to dial this down and you have 4 more weeks to stay on it. Nothing like
right,
that.
Right, right. Not saying, okay, we're going to initially cut 4 weeks, and then in a month we're going to cut another 4 weeks. And over the next 5 months, we're going to cut back 5 months' worth of unemployment so that the people who are on it and are expecting it only in the sense that they have been searching and have been looking for work and they have become disheartened, now all of a sudden it's been, like you said, the rug's been completely pulled out from underneath them, and they're on their backs with nothing coming in. So now there's an even larger level of desperation in that person.
Yep.
Which is going to cause them to do things that hopefully, God, I can only hope that they're not going to do something that, you know, is going to hurt them or hurt others because of not being able to provide.
But once you get into that mindset where you don't have what you need to survive anymore, then that's what you do. I mean, you you have to take care of your best interests in any way that you can and kind of fuck everybody else in theirs.
Yeah. Just, wow. Wow, these are a couple of downer stories to start off our day.
Hey, man, they're just important. And I think
absolutely. I'm not saying everything has to be funny, but wow. I mean, we had such a great... No. We had a great day yesterday. It was a lot of fun with Pinchy Peter in here. I guess we haven't really focused on some of the more hardcore news because of that. And I think just coming right into it, it's just like, wow, these are not good things. And how are these things happening?
Okay, well, we'll go with one more serious news story. Then we'll move on to some lighter stuff, fluff. Yesterday was the clinching day for Mitt Romney. He now has the Republican nomination in hand. He has all 1,144 delegates needed to claim the nomination.
So our upcoming election is completely pointless.
It means shit.
Yeah.
It means... Does it ever mean anything?
Like to think that it would.
Even in like the like the real national election for president, the polls close here. They already know who won.
Yeah. The LA Times was reporting just a couple of days ago that Obama still has a strong grip on the state of California in regards to support. I think everybody's written off California into the Democrats. They have been for
our entire life.
No. Reagan carried California.
Yeah, he did have that one weak ass Walter Mondale that he ran against, and won that time.
Didn't he?
I don't believe he won the first time.
I thought he did because he was the former governor of the state. I thought he did carry California against Ford.
It's possible.
I mean, Carter.
I'll look into it when we have a second.
You're right. Since then, it's been nothing but a blue state.
And basically, when I'm 4 years old, I still consider that our whole lifetime. I mean, like it was that was a long ass time ago.
Yeah.
It's been completely Democrat for so long. But I guess the big story that came out of it is Donald Trump was hosting the event that was going on here to announce that he had gotten the presidential nomination. And once again, the guy just does not know what to say. He said he's going to turn this country around. He's going to create some jobs like you haven't seen for many, many years. We're a great country. Soon we won't be a great country at all. Mitt Romney will make us a great country again. By the way, what's happening with Obama's birth certificate?
Yeah.
Does he have to sneak that in every fucking time?
Yep. That's all he wants to run with.
I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And this is at a function for Mitt Romney, correct? In which he's kind of putting his support behind Romney?
Yeah. I mean, this was a event thrown by Trump to kind of like twist the arms to make necessary the financial events that people need to be able to actually run for president.
Right. So he's basically giving Mitt Romney his endorsement, but at the same time, he's going to try and reach out to the birthers again.
Yeah, I mean, which seems like it's a dead issue.
It is. And it's just going to piss off the people who are still stuck on the fence on who they're going to vote for. Because I think a lot of people are just tired of hearing it.
I'm sick of hearing it. Yeah. I don't even know what to believe on it.
Right.
He may not have a birth certificate, but I don't give a shit anymore. It's like... find a way of actually beating him on policies and things that the American people actually want, and like make more people vote for Mitt Romney as opposed to just saying, "Oh yeah, well he's illegal."
Right? Yeah, because then think about it this way: if you're able to change the administration and you're influential enough to have maybe a little say, where you can say, "Hey, maybe you now want to have some kind of federally based investigation to find out if the last president we had truly was legally allowed to be the president. If it's such a big issue, maybe afterwards you can. And maybe you can be the one to head up the investigation with the understanding that the administration knows about it.
Trump and Joe Arpaio can get together.
Yeah. That'll be his next apprentice.
That'd be hilarious. It just seems like it's such a dead issue to me. It's like, I didn't believe this at first.
Right.
But the more I started like watching these people, there's some like look they get across their faces when they're talking about it that does come across as kind of racist. Like they really believe that Obama is some dude from another country that's just trying to trick us all.
And, uh-huh.
There's such joy that people seem to get out of saying it that it's gotten to the point of being disgusting to me.
Yeah. It's a dead issue, and I hope we can stay that way.
Yeah, me too. But it's not going to, man.
Not until Trump is a dead issue, then it'll be a dead issue.
So let's hope that happens soon. Okay, so let's do some lighter news. Yesterday on BBC America, they were doing a report about the United Nations, and they put up the logo on the screen, and they're talking about it, and they started getting calls. The logo you have on the screen is not really from the United Nations. What you have on your screen is from the video game Halo, and that is from the United Nations Space Command, the agency in the video game that's tasked with protecting Earth from hostile forces.
So that's awesome.
Good job checking your stuff out there, BBC America, who all like liberal elites love telling you that I get my news from BBC America. It's the only way you can really find out what's happening in America. They're so much smarter and they tell us so much of the truth.
They're so much more unbiased.
Yeah, it turns out that the UN Security Council doesn't even have like its own logo. It's like they were looking for something that doesn't exist. They found this thing from Halo and they decided to just throw it up there on the screen without paying attention
close,
at all.
It's close enough. It says United Nations and it says security.
UNSC is what it is. So they took that as United Nations
Security Council.
Security Council. They did not take it as
Space Command.
Space Command. Dude, that's pretty funny, man.
That's awesome. You know what? They should adopt that now. They should see if they could take that and we're going to change it. It's now going to be the United States Security Council, and this will be our logo.
I mean, this is what you get when you have like Google being used as a research in a news department.
It's an intern who works for the BBC who probably plays a lot of Halo, and he just was like, oh, that's what this must be it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that before, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Security Council.
Yeah, I remember killing some aliens right underneath that sign. I'm pretty sure that that's the real that's the real dealio.
That's awesome. Did they acknowledge that they had the wrong symbol up?
Yeah, hours later. Like, the whole story went by, and they had no idea that it went on until people started contacting them through Twitter. And actually, wow, that's crazy. They actually used the same logo for 3 months on different stories until somebody who was watching it paid attention and noticed.
One video game nerd who's happened to tune into the BBC News saw it and was like, wait a second, they're talking about Halo?
Yeah.
Wait, that's not Halo. That's not the security. What? The United Nations Security Council? What are they talking about? Three months.
That's 3 months. I mean, that is a long time.
This just shows that the United Nations Security Council needs to create a logo.
Yeah, they should.
They need to have logos because otherwise everyone's going to get confused.
It'd be hilarious if somehow they used Master Chief, like the main villain from or the main hero from Halo, in their actual logo just to confuse it even more.
It'd be hilarious.
It's just awful.
Like the helmet.
I mean, this is a lot of proof as to like just how much research goes into your newscast.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like it's all willy-nilly. They have no idea what is actually going on, and they're no more trustworthy with the news than we are.
Nope.
I mean, they aren't. Like, we have just as good of a research department. My Google works just as well as theirs does.
Yep. It's just, yeah, they're right up there with Fox and CNN and MSNBC.
Yep, that's right, man. Effing ridiculous.
It is. I'm actually really more surprised that it didn't wind up on, like, MSNBC or CNN.
Are they even a real news organization anymore?
CNN?
MSNBC.
Oh, no. I think they're just a opinion station now.
That's what they seem to be. Doesn't seem to be anything else really going on there.
Nope.
Okay, so last real news story before we go to our break. I can't believe we've already done half an hour. That's crazy. Have you heard about the Flame cyber attack?
No.
Okay, so the Flame cyber attack is this new virus that gets into your computer, mines out all the information, sends it out. Now, okay, that's not too new.
Right.
But what this does is this, once it goes into your computer system, it starts looking for your Bluetooth and sending out to other things in your realm. So, I mean, it could attach to my iPhone. It can attach to anything that is controlled with a Bluetooth. It can go in there and mine out all of its data, too. So it's the first to move from beyond the physically infected computer into
through a wireless network, being able to transfer that virus.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's through a wireless connection, it's transferring that, and then through the Bluetooth through into your phone to be able to mine through your phone.
Yeah,
and it's erasing all. Is it erasing this stuff as well?
No,
it's
just they don't want you to know. They don't want you to know you have it. They want you to continue on. What it does is it turns on your web phone, your what's this thing called? Web camera. What's it called?
Yeah, the webcam.
Yeah, webcam. And it also turns on your microphones. So it just starts picking up conversation and data mining. And it's pretty insane. It's the first of its kind. So now they're trying to figure out who did it. like, who is the one that has made this?
Mm-hmm.
And a top Israeli official said that his country could be behind it, but they're not actually claiming that they are or denying that they are.
Great.
This is a scary one to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it makes me glad I don't have a Bluetooth.
I mean, you can just walk past. Your phone has Bluetooth.
Well, no, but
no way it does.
No, but I mean, it can, from my computer, it can physically turn on the Bluetooth on my phone.
Yeah.
Without. Okay, I didn't realize that. I thought if I had my Bluetooth activated, it could then.
I mean, it doesn't have to be turned on. It just has to have the capability for it. You can walk past a computer that has this infected within, like, I think it's a 50-yard range or something.
Damn.
And it would start picking up your information and just start stealing it all.
Man, they know how I have all four Angry Birds applications on my phone then.
Wow. You are exactly who they are going after.
It is. Totally they know that Rovio and they just know they got to create more levels for me.
You're ridiculous, sir. Hey, there goes our half hour. Get our move on. So we're going to take ourselves back to August 27th of 2010 for a special interview with the folks from the Blue Seals. So check this out, and we'll be back right after this.
All right. Hey, hold on one second. Hey, this is Jake Belcher back again. That was Spirit Math, one of the favorite acts of the show. They, I believe we'll be coming out and playing maybe our third live party, which we haven't even announced we're having a second one. But hey, you're going to get to see them live pretty soon. Jake Belcher.
I think
Grant's masturbating to the girls that were just in here a minute ago, which I can't really blame him. Joining us in studio right now, I got to go see a movie last night that I have to say that I saw a lot of the films this week, and a lot of them were so, I don't want to say amateurishly done, but there's gaping holes and problems with lots of them. But this one, I don't really have anything to complain about. It's called The Blue Seal, and we have with us today the director, the writer, and the
composer
of the music, which we'll get into in a second. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Well, I'm Mike Donis, and I'm the director and producer.
And I'm Marsha Kernia, and I'm the writer, co-producer.
Finally, I'm Aaron Sang. I'm the composer for the film.
And associate producer.
All right. So how was it getting your movie in? How did you guys get started to begin with?
Get started in which sense?
Just filmmaking at all.
Well, it started when I was a wee lad of five.
Mm-hmm.
And I visited Disney World with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids ride. And I found
I'm familiar.
Out,
yep.
Yeah, and I found out how blue screening worked. And I went home and used the family camcorder, like my mom and dad helped, and I made my first special effects movie
called The Shrinking Machine,
and I was the actor and director of it.
Cool. How did you how did you decide you wanted to start writing?
Well, I've been writing my whole life. My sister and I used to make fight scenes in the backyard with sticks and costumes, and I wanted to be an economist originally, and that kind of fell apart completely in high school when I was like, math, science, no. So I completely fell into this pretty well-formed world of Mike and Aaron and their filmmaking, and I was really honored to be included in that. So that's how I got into filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron?
I've always been a musician. I've been taking piano lessons since I was 4 or 5 years old. But I really started having an interest in composition because of Mike. I met Mike in high school when we were both about 14 or so.
Long time ago.
So yeah. Something like that. And he was making Star Wars films.
cool.
And he was using John Williams
Lucas,
music.
Do not sue us, please.
You know, with no license. He was using John Williams music. And I was like, oh, this is not legal. So uh-huh.
That's a good way of getting a job, telling someone you're doing something illegal, man.
That's right.
Yeah. So I at the time was, still very amateur. I was, writing like little piano scores and stuff. But I mean, sooner or later, we both took our Star Wars fun stuff a little more seriously. And we started, I started writing music more seriously. Mm-hmm. And then we are here where we are now.
So how did the Blue Seal project come about?
Well, we were all a part of a team for a 48-hour film challenge, and they told us
we had Toronto.
Hooray!
More Canadians.
Go Canada.
Go A? Eh? Right?
Go Canada.
Eh? Have a beer?
I'm going to say
so,
A.
Yes. Anyway, we made a movie, and they gave us action as a genre, and we made a short film called The Blue Seal, which you can check out on YouTube or whatever. And when we were finished that, we were working on something else, but we kind of kept saying, you know what? Let's develop this. We had people kind of liking it, mm-hmm. And we figured, why the heck not? And that kind of started the story design process.
Well, you guys are all so young. I was really I was expecting something on video, I guess, or something that was just didn't look polished at all. But just like the shot setup, and I really love the way your action came together on your car chase scenes, and just the shakiness of the camera. I really felt that I was involved in the situation that was going on, and I was really impressed. Like, I think that there's a good future for the three of you, and in this film in particular.
Thank you so much.
That means a lot.
Really, man. So what was it like to bring it out to a fest where you're going to put it in front of people you don't know, and what was the build-up to that in your heads?
Well, I felt like I was going to throw up about 2 hours before the screening, but calmed myself down. It was just exciting because we'd shown it to some family and friends, but we'd never been in front of an audience who weren't going to have a personal bias as to whether they would like the film. So it was exciting.
Yeah, when I finished vomiting, I felt the same way.
Man, and Aaron, you always look like you're doing cool, man. How did you deal with it?
No, I just deadpan no matter how I feel. So I know I was pissing my pants too. Yeah.
Well, you would never be able to tell from the outside at all. So you guys are up for some awards, correct?
That's right.
What categories are you nominated in?
Well, our lead, our fantastic lead actor, John Kraft, he's up for breakout male action star.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron's score is nominated for Best Score.
Man, as well it should be. I want to get into it in a second. Like, I was blown away.
Yeah, no, he did a wonderful job. And we're also we don't know which sequence yet, but Best Action Sequence.
Oh, really? Yes. If you had to guess in your head, which one would you think is like your favorite of them?
Well, my favorite, I would say the bit with the Trans Am spinning in front of the train. That's my favorite scene.
Mine too.
The Trans Am nearly gets hit by the train, but it spins out and screeches to a stop before the train.
Yeah, I have to apologize. Last night I was not able to make it out to the screening. I had intended to with Jake originally, but I just had a long 6-day work week, and most of those were opening shifts, so it's like.
And we've been partying late with all these
other exactly.
people. That's how it works. You know, like,
exactly. Oh, we went out to a couple of nights there, and it's just like. Yeah. That's not usually that late of a time for me, but after 6 days straight of working, it was just like, okay, I'm not getting up off the couch. I've got a beer here. I got a shot waiting for me. It sounds great. I'm now wishing I had gotten a chance to see it because Jake has done nothing but talk about it since we met up at 3 o'clock.
It's not just lip service. Like tell you, I've had people on here who are famous people and told them that they suck nuts.
We do not suck nuts for the record.
You do not suck nuts.
All maybe right. something else. That's your quote from the DVD box.
That's right.
Jake Belcher says
Jake
it does
Belcher
not
says.
Suck nuts.
You do not suck nuts.
Yeah, that's right. So how have you guys enjoyed coming down here to L.A.?
Aaron, you want to
First of all, I'm really impressed. We're known as the Canadians. We're supposed to be the nice guys,
so
right?
We're exotic. Uh-huh.
And we're supposed to be ever. Oh, you're the Canadians. You must be really nice, all this kind of. And I was just surprised that everyone here was actually nicer than the people I'm used to seeing in
really?
Toronto.
It's called acting.
Well, maybe that's true, but it works.
And this is its capital. So, of course, they ought to come across as nice. No, I'm just kidding, but...
Not everybody, including, the people who work in at restaurants and whatnot, anybody.
Especially the AOF people.
The AOF people, thank you, yes.
Oh, yeah, like, we showed up, seriously, and, like, Del Weston immediately, oh, hey, what's your name, Mike? Mike, oh, you did the Blue Seal. Oh, hey, Josh, come over here. Hey, these guys did the Blue Seal. And they're like, they knew the film and everything, and it was just... You got a little family when we showed up, which was really cool. It was my first time in California, so, it was
likewise
very nice.
Are any of you thinking about not going back?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I've got a cottage weekend planned right when I get back, so...
Oh, fancy.
I must vamoose.
Hey, can we try our luck and see if we did... Oh, they hung up. We had a call coming in that with a Canadian prefix.
Oh,
no, you're kidding.
So it may have actually been
call
someone that knows you. If you're listening...
That's relevant to our interest.
Exactly.
If you're listening, call.
That sounds like a resume.
Exactly.
So do you guys know which... Oops. Stick around later for the rest of that interview. We're going to play this little month and we'll be right back in.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio Radio with Jake Belcher and Brant Thoman.
Stupidity. Hey, this is Jake Belcher.
And I'm Brant Thoman.
And we were introducing our first guest of the show. He's been on... GTA here before on Skid Row Studios, also been out for one of the GTA live shows at the West Side. He's actually going to be our headliner on June 16th out at the West Side again, so we're stoked to have him in. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Gelbart.
Hooray! Hooray! Welcome, lovers. I'm back.
Push the red button.
The white button.
It becomes red. Oh, there you go.
Sorry.
There we go.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I've returned to the show.
Thanks for coming back, man. How you doing today?
Oh, it's great to be here. So good to see you guys. Oh, my God.
Well, we're glad to have you. We can probably pull that forward to your face, too, so that...
I'm ready. I'm ready to say really interesting things. And I approved your Facebook post just now, so...
Thank you.
If anyone looks at my wall, you'll know I'm on the show right now.
That you are. We know that it's early to get out here, so we do appreciate you taking your time and coming out and being with us.
This is nothing.
What time do you usually wake up in a day?
I set the alarm today for 8 o'clock in the morning, but I woke up before it. I woke up at 7:30. I have no hours. No hours at all.
Nothing set? It's just nothing random all the time?
If there's meetings... Then obviously I have a schedule. But if I have a writing contract that's due, but I get to work from home, it's kind of like I decide whatever time during the day I'm going to work. So, it's any given time. I could go to bed at 4, wake up at 10 or 11. I could go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8. It changes all the time. Lately, I find myself only being able to get 4 hours of sleep. No matter what time I go to sleep, I wake up 4 hours later. It's really upsetting.
I'm in about that same spot. Like, literally, it's 4 hours every time. I go to bed at 2:30, I wake up at 6:30. I go to bed at 1:30, I wake up at 5:30. It's always 4 hours for me now.
And even if I wake up going, damn it, it's still 4 hours. You know, you try and guess how many hours it was.
Yeah.
Like, that felt like 7. And then you look at oh, damn it, it's still 4. And then... I go, oh, I guess I'm up now. It's over. Like, I'm not a roll over and go back to sleep kind of person.
I used to be the master at that. I used to be so good at it. But something about, like, now that once my mind wakes up, I just can't get back to that relaxed stage of like, a peaceful exhilaration anymore.
Yeah, me too. And I don't even try. If I wake up, I'm up. Uh-huh. And then I ruin things during the day. Like, the first time I saw the Avengers... I had only slept 4 hours, and then I'm like super interested, but I'm like, oh no, I'm falling asleep. Yeah. Oh no. And like, you're forcing yourself to stay awake. So I had to go see it again just to make sure I saw every scene.
Did it hold up the second time?
It was better because I was, I saw everything. The first time I saw like 90% of it, and the second time I saw 100% of a movie. That's what you need when you see a movie, 100%. All the scenes.
Yeah, that's important.
And the same thing, I got a little too ambitious when The Dictator opened. My friends were like, let's go see a midnight show, the Thursday midnight show. And with my sleep patterns, that's not going to work out, right? So, and that's only an hour and 23-minute movie. And around the hour mark, I'm like, no, don't, oh! Like, you know, I'm forcing myself to stay awake. And sometimes I'm not even hungry at the movies. But I buy something because I know you don't fall asleep when you're chewing. It's impossible.
That's true.
You've got enormous problems if you fall asleep while chewing.
That's a good question for Carl. Has he ever fallen asleep while chewing?
Oh, Carl has fallen asleep while doing every possible thing that he's capable of doing.
I don't know. Based off his size, I don't think his body would let him stop chewing to fall asleep. I think it has to ingest it, and then it'll go, okay, that's the last bite, and boom, he's out.
Are you saying that Carl's size... His love of food is so great that it even overpowers sleep. Like,
yes.
It's like, I'm not going to stop enjoying this nacho to fall asleep.
Hey, Carl, we're attacking you and you just walked in. Come in, get on.
Well.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's our second guest of the day. Push that white button before you start talking, dude. Otherwise, the mic won't pick you up. First of all, I promise, we rarely, rarely speak about you when you're not here. Total at randomness.
Uh-huh.
But ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Carl Kozlowski.
Yeah, Carl, hi. I was saying that I fall asleep during movies that I really want to see. Just little bit, because I've only been sleeping 4 hours a night.
Mm.
And that's when it was
and
said.
He said he buys stuff to eat because you never fall asleep while you're chewing. So I was saying, well, you know, there's a question for Carl. Have you ever fallen asleep like mid-bite of something? Like, you've taken a bite of a hot dog and you're just so tired that you just sit there kind of slack-jawed and fall asleep? Or do you finish the bite and then allow sleep to take you?
I think he's got it.
Allowed to take you. That's good phrasing. I'm not really sure. I do know that sometimes I've woken up and gone, oh, why is that soda, you know, knocked over on the floor? And why is half a hot dog sitting on my lap?
So half a hot dog. That tells you what you need to know.
Yes. But you don't know he might have finished chewing that other half first.
Yeah, I probably would have choked. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say that he finished the human body forces you to swallow before you fall asleep.
That sounds like an open comment.
It sounds filthy, but you know, swallowing was invented around the same time as prostitutes and whores, right? Swallowing was a thing before sex. It was always swallowing, and it meant food, drinks. It didn't just mean filthy things.
Jizzies. Yeah. Now, it would be weird to fall asleep with like a mouthful of food. I mean, that would be bizarre. That doesn't make a lot of sense at all. I do know that it's a great way of waking Carl up. I remember one of the first times you passed out over my house, we had this bowl of pudding. So Carl's asleep, and we start painting his mouth with pudding.
Oh.
And he wakes up, and he goes, like he puts his hand on it, and he instantly shoves it into his mouth. Like he doesn't even know what's on his face at all.
Yeah.
But he just starts eating away at it.
I will say this, that I had a favorite bus driver. I rely on the bus system because of my tendency to pass out. And there was this guy named JB that you might have met him. I can't remember, but I wrote about him a couple times in my
job. I wrote a couple times with him because you loved him so much. Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome. And so, anyway, so JB and the guys would always like play tricks on me early on when they first met me. And there were a couple occasions where I'd pass out asleep. And then when they got to the end of a trip, like from Pasadena to Hollywood, and he's on his break, the people that he would allow to stay on the bus, his regular crew of riders, they would play like, see what it takes to wake Carl up. And they would, and at different times I found myself, you know, with sandwiches dangling in front of my nose and things like that, and I'd be revived by
it. I bet they dangled a whole bunch of things in front of your nose.
Again, filthy? That's how you know you take the bus often. When you develop a relationship with your fellow bus users, that they're close enough to you to play tricks on you.
Yeah, you have a favorite driver.
Yeah, driver. And that there's a wacky gang of pranksters that you know well. They call it Carl. They call
pretty
out your
much.
Name.
It was like Cheers on Wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like some crazy bum thing that went on all night long, right?
Yeah. They called it the Loco 180. Was the group of about 12 guys that would ride every night, all night.
Ridiculous. The ridiculousness that is Carl's life.
I've only been on the L.A. city buses a couple times in my life. I don't know if I strike you as a car person, but I've only taken like two buses here, and it's been super late at night. And I get, you know, I put on like a super angry face hoping that people will think I'm badass.
How's that 'cause work?
Well, no one's ever talked to me. I've created the story in my head, right? But there's always stuff going on these buses where a guy bordering on homeless will start swearing like crazy and everyone's all horrified, and I'll just be there scowling, pretending I'm like, you know, ready to...
Yeah.
If anyone looks at me, at least I got this mean face on, you know?
Well, you got to have a plan. And yeah. Even though that sounds like a horrible plan.
And then the guy, hey, you with the mean face! You know, then it works in reverse. Like uh-huh. They notice you because
I've tried that before a couple times. Look tough, and then they definitely come look.
Don't wake up in the side of a ditch, Carl. Please.
Well, I've done that. Looking,
making an angry face is only going to piss off the other people. You're just going to get chased down the road and left in a ditch.
Since a psychotic person, you want to fuck with the guy with the angry face because, like, you have to prove yourself against that guy.
Plus, I don't know. I mean, the listeners can't see me, but I look like someone who was cast as a guy who's putting on an angry face, not an actual... I look like a guy playing the role of uh-huh. someone. Like, when I was a kid, Mark Harmon was in a TV movie where he played, like, a rapist or something.
He was Ted Bundy, the deliberate stranger.
Yeah, and that's not as good as an actor as Mark Harmon is. That's not what the psychos and crazies look like.
No, I mean, they look like people that don't look like they go to church every Sunday morning. And he's like a choir boy.
Is that what he looks like?
He looks like a grown-up choir boy to me.
Yeah. The first time I saw him, well, I guess it was in that movie, but Summer School in '87. Summer School, well, that was a movie of my childhood. So I was like, I want to grow up and be like that guy. Because he was one of those, remember in the 80s, every single leading man was too cool for the whatever was going on in the movie.
Yeah.
And every single thing they said was a one-liner, right? So I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to be one of those guys who everything they say is a quip. They don't take... And that was the defining movie character in the 80s. Everyone played that.
Yeah, no doubt. Like,
you could either do a variation of Bill Murray or you weren't going to work as a comedic actor.
It's like you didn't even have a movie if you didn't have a guy playing that role.
Yeah, exactly. We're on the air right now, right?
Yes, we are.
Everyone left. You know why they left, folks? Can I tell them?
I just wanted to close the door so we couldn't hear the sound. Our next guest has arrived, and Carl, being the celebrity cocksucker that he is.
Yeah, he's creeping out Doris Roberts
yeah,
right now.
Just had to run in there and be like,
they can't hear us right now, right?
No.
Carl's probably creeping her out right now. It's like, I've gotten to 82 and I got to talk to this guy.
I have the script that I wrote for you. Could you read the script while you wait to come
it's
on?
It's a spec episode of Raymond. That show's been off the air since 2004. I don't care.
But maybe you could give it to him and they'll want to rehash it.
No, but I am super excited. I got to be honest. I'm super excited about this, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Like,
yeah, I wanted to be here for Kevin...
Smith.
Kevin Smith Day would have been great. I've been watching all his live and concert movies.
And then we have David Koechner here on Friday. We're pretty excited about
that. That would be cool. I worked with him once. We were on the same charity function. His sketch troupe was on, and I was the guest stand-up. But I didn't talk to him once.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'll come back Friday. Actually, I'll be flying away on Thursday.
Where are you heading to?
Going to Canada to headline a comedy club on Thursday and Friday, and then I'm doing the people that are flying me are is a charity function. I'm the special guest comedian at this big event on Saturday night. So I'm gone for 10 days. I'm working 5, and I'm relaxing 5.
Seeing family back there.
Going to see family and chums and do a few podcasts. Mm-hmm. And the usual.
Who are the podcasts to do in Canada?
There's a great one. There's this guy, Jason Agnew. I don't know. And he's doing his on Sunday. It should be good.
Man, the weirdest podcast I ever listened to actually came from Canada. I don't remember the name of it right now. But they brought Doug Stanhope on. And they unwittingly dosed him with acid before he got on the show. And he had no idea that he was doing it.
Well, at least it was. It wasn't wittingly.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true. Like he didn't have to admit to it, but they had to stop recording in the middle of it a couple times because he kept freaking out and breaking their stuff on the air. So I learned from that one that that's probably not a good way to treat your guests when they come on.
Okay, how are we doing the seating situation for Doris?
Okay, well, good question.
Yeah, let's do that on the air. This conversation.
Yeah, maybe we'll set the viewers' imaginations. Brant and I are down on the end of one side. You and Carl are down on the end of the other, and there's two seats in the middle. Yeah. So it's like, who gets to sit with her?
I'm not forcing Doris Roberts to sit in the middle. I'll move over. Should I move over now?
Yeah, that's probably a good
Watch
idea.
Watch this.
We'll slide you on down.
I want Doris to sit near me.
Get the fuck out of here, Carl. What is wrong with you? They can't hear us out there.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Okay.
No, I mean,
all right, here we are.
There's no.
You can have her sit near you. I don't want to.
Be right across from you there, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a reasonable spot for her.
Starting to rise.
Yeah, and I don't want to take away your childhood dream.
Well, I've been a fan since Remington Steele.
Oh. Well, we've decided earlier that fans before Remington Steele. So you're second place, sir.
Yep.
I mean, I've been watching her almost my entire life. Angie, when I was a kid, when I was like 5 or 6.
Oh, wow.
It was a 2-season sitcom with Donna Preskow from Saturday Night Fever fame.
If and, I remember correctly, she got gangbanged, right?
I watched any show Gary Marshall produced, you know, because his shows were mostly family stuff. And
hey, can you pull that mic a little bit closer to you? Or?
I don't see why not.
There we go. Yeah. That's much better.
I like to I like to come in here and be super casual. That means not caring if I'm talking into the mic.
Oh,
but
wow.
that defeats the whole point,
it
right?
It sure does. Yeah. Like, that is knocking things. That is not a smash.
No, it's not a smash. Did you say smash because I say smash sometimes?
Yes.
I stopped saying smash in my act, you know?
You gave up the smash?
I used to announce that I'm going to do my greatest hits or smashes, and then I'd say smash after a particularly good joke. Or
smash.
Sometimes I'd say it when I never wrote a punchline for a joke, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then I'd just say smash, and they'd clap.
That was your here's your sign?
Yeah, pretty much. That's upsetting that, you know, you're supposed to finish writing your jokes, not just rely on some catchphrase.
Uh-huh.
But, you know. So I used to say smash, and then suddenly, like, around Super Bowl, I'm driving, and I see signs that smash is coming on television, big show called smash, and I'm like, there's a show called smash now? Like, it's ruining the word smash for me, you know? And then the Hulk, he says smash.
Hulk smash.
Hulk smash.
So I haven't said smash on stage in a while. I don't know if I'm ever going to say smash again.
That's weird, man.
I think you filled your smash quota just doing this show.
If the audience says, "Hey, say smash,"
has that ever happened?
No. But I'll tell you something that did happen. One of my self-deprecating little jokes is, "Hey, folks, name your favorite Michael Gelbart joke," and I'll do it for like I say, "Name your favorite Michael Gelbart joke," and I'll do it, and everyone laughs because they mostly have never heard of me. They don't have a favorite Michael Gelbart joke. So I'm at a club, and I go, "Hey, everyone, what's your favorite Michael Gelbart joke? I'll do it for you right now." And some guy in the audience is like, "Do the bathroom graffiti bit." And I'm like, "Man, you just ruined the whole thing, because the point is that most people don't know who I am," and then you went and ruined the point.
Was it an actual person like you didn't know? Like,
I didn't know this person.
In some way, that's got to be pretty cool.
There have been little things, because, you know, I've been on TV a few times, but not enough times for you to be a celebrity. Mm-hmm. So you have moments, you have nights in your life where you've been called up to AAA. No, you've been called up to the majors, and then you're back to AAA ball the next day. So there are days when you're famous. And if people see you on those days, to them, you're a guy on television.
Uh-huh.
But to everyone who happened to miss that 5-minute spot, you don't exist still.
Man, just that normal guy. Get out of here.
So fortunately or unfortunately, there have been times where, yeah, you have fans. One group of college kids drove like 12 hours to come see me once. They saw me on a half-hour special, and then they Googled me, and they saw where I'd be, and they're like, "Let's take a road trip and go see this guy."
Oh, you've reached the same level as the Doritos taco from Taco Bell. Because they're using that as like their big commercial that these kids like to drive 12 hours to catch the Doritos taco.
I would do it.
They go, "You've reached the same level to some college kids as the Doritos taco."
If you're driving 12 hours to get a Dorito, you see, if you want to see me, I'm only in that city that day.
Uh-huh.
But these dumb kids, there's Taco Bells are
hundreds
everywhere.
Of them. Hundreds of
kids,
them.
Do you know how many Taco Bells you drove by to... to get to this one, you stupid kid?
Yeah, you didn't drive past any other Michael Gelbarts to get to you.
Yeah, I mean, someone might be stealing my bits or something. Or there'd be another white male who's sort of funny. You know, there's a lot of those.
There's a few, that's true.
Yeah. But, there's been little things like that have come up.
Did you, hang out with those kids afterwards? Like, try to make them feel like...
Well, I was super excited, and they gave me a note and stuff. It was the greatest.
Or did you kind of, treat them like... Yeah, they're fans, and I should just meet them afterwards.
No, I try and treat all the people that anyone who comes to me and with that kind of story and is that excited, you got to treat them super well. You know, I don't care what level of success I would get to. I would like to believe that unless someone was incredibly disrespectful or rude, that if it came from a place of that kind of positive reinforcement, that karmically. It would ruin you not to embrace that, I think. You know? What I think.
It would kind of make you a terrible person.
But terrible things would happen. Terrible things happen to you as a result of being a terrible person, I think.
I think they're linked with one another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so are you kind of rooting for the show Smash to get canceled?
I hear... Well, I don't
root. Who isn't? For the,
I don't know. I never saw the show.
I mean, just so you can get ownership of it back?
Then people would go, "Why is he saying Smash, the failed TV show? Like, why is he mentioning Smash all the time, that television show that didn't work out, you know?" So I don't know if I can... Here's the thing. I don't know. You know, you try and look for things that make you more interesting on stage, and announcing that your act has greatest hits and you're doing Smashes is interesting, but at a certain point, you know, maybe I look at my... maybe I'm looking at it too much or thinking too much, but it feels kind of like a gimmick after a certain point, you know? And I tire of gimmicks easily.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the audience likes it. I have no idea.
I think audiences love gimmicks. Oh. I mean, just look at the people that that have gimmicks in comedy that have huge success. I mean, you have, Carrot Top with his props. You have Gallagher with the smashing things. You have, when you have a gimmick, it's like dumb people just kind of latch on to that.
Three of the four of the blue-collar comedy guys all have gimmicks or catchphrases. I mean, that's...
Which one doesn't? Oh, the Ron White?
Ron White doesn't.
He's got, the tater salad is sort of?
That's a story. That's an anecdotal joke.
That's as close as it gets to for him.
And isn't he supposed to be the sophisticated blue-collar guy? Like the well-dressed, yeah, in a suit country gentleman?
With the big glass, yeah, of bourbon and the cigarettes that's now like moved up to nice Cuban cigars and like high-end scotch. Yeah,
he's supposed to be the
classy one.
Yeah, the class. So even that's a bit of a thing, you know? And I thought about, you know, you need a thing. I'll be the guy in suits every day, you know? And then you got to go to the Grove and, hey, there he is in a suit in July. This is kind of hot that he's, it's hot for this guy. He's embracing this character so much that he's in a suit in the middle of summer.
Yeah, that's terrible. Like, you are living the gimmick then, and it's like Hulk Hogan walking around all the time with a championship belt on or something. Like, it's not real, and this is just a character, so move on to something else.
But when you see that guy, like, we all know some guys who wear suits and then they decide to wear suits all the time, even on days where they shouldn't be wearing suits.
Like Paul F. Tompkins. I saw him like near the beach wearing a suit down, yeah, at the beach. I'm like, what is going on here?
And to me, and I don't know Paul F. Tompkins. I think he's a funny comedian.
Hilarious.
But to me, a lot of these people where you see them doing that all the time, it looks almost like a Halloween costume. Mm-hmm. Or it looks like, come on, you know, it looks like it's done out of fear almost. Like, people are not going to identify me with something, and I'm going to lose whatever thing I've built by not wearing this. So it seems like it seems like a fear-based decision to me. I don't know. Not him necessarily. I don't know the psychology of a man I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and there's no doubt he's been incredibly successful by being like the classiest dressed comic in the room. I mean, that has worked very well for him. I mean, I try to have my stupid thing with my bandana all the time, with a bandana
and the shorts.
And it's like, there is this weird part of me. It's like, oh, if I go out tonight and I don't wear my bandana to the comedy club, then like, are people going to know who I am? Or,
yeah, I wonder about that too. Like, I'm wondering if I should get a little thing that I thought about dressing like Don Draper, but no. You know, I haven't been able to commit. And I know I wouldn't commit when I'm not in a comedy club. I guarantee that.
I think you're a Fonz type. I think you should be wearing leather jackets.
A Fonz type.
Yeah.
Well, you know, saying smash is sort of like saying A and stuff. And one week, my middle, you know, you headline a club, you have a middle act. My middle act said to me at the end of the weekend, you're acting like you're the Fonz on stage.
Wow.
Like, it feels like the Fonz.
Oh, we'll see.
So maybe I should do that.
Hey. Yeah.
Brown leather jacket, not the black, because that was too racy.
When the Fonz wore, I'm wearing the, well, originally Fonzie was wearing a beige cotton jacket.
Yep. What? Like a members only kind of, almost like with like the collar and everything.
Yeah, they thought, ABC thought he looked too much like a hoodlum, right? So they said, God, anytime he's not around his motorcycle, we're putting him in a beige cotton jacket. So then Gary Marshall was like, we're going to have him around his motorcycle every single scene. So he'd be always with the cycle, so he'd have the jacket on. But occasionally early on, Fonzie had a beige jacket, looked ridiculous.
And then it just went down to the t-shirt. Like, if he wasn't going to be by the bike, he would just be in his white. Like, he's a mechanic, and he's always in the most pristine white t-shirt.
By the end of the run of the show, those later seasons where Fonzie became an auto mechanics teacher, he used to wear a sports jacket. Like, he'd have the jeans, the t-shirt, and suddenly Fonzie's wearing a beige sports jacket because he's, like, older and, you know, so now you're wearing a sports jacket.
That show lasted for a long time. I mean,
10-year run, 74 to 84.
I mean, you can't just stay in that same outfit forever.
No. There was an evolution.
The
Fonz
had to grow.
Dude, that show got like really weird to me. Like, I must have missed some links there in the middle. What was the relationship between Chachi and Fonz? I mean, was there
that was Fonzie's cousin?
Yes.
So they are actually related on the show.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I got into an argument with a friend the other day because I was sure that they were actually related. They're like, oh, no, he was just some kid on the street that he picked up.
No. Chachi Arcola was, in fact, Fonzie's cousin.
You actually know his last name.
I know everything about all the TV shows that ever occurred.
Okay, you can't know everything. What was the name of the commander in F Troop?
Oh, that was General Johnson.
Okay.
No, I made that up. It's got to be shows that I know.
I used to love watching that.
But that starred Forrest Tucker, and I don't know. I clearly don't know anything about F Troop. I lied.
Well.
We are dead air now. No one cares.
No, my bad. I was just making sure that our guest knew when she was coming in.
By the way, folks, I know I come off really natural on the show like I'm one of the gang, but I'm actually a guest also.
Yeah, but we enjoy having you here, man. Like, if you were a drag to heaven, we'd be like, no, he came in once and that was good.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had that most of the time.
Most of the time we walk out of like, dog, like, he's not coming back again.
The key to this kind of stuff is just, it's the same as sitting at a table talking to your pals. There just happens to be microphones, but...
Yeah, it's like sitting on a couch with some buddies.
That's exactly what it feels like to me. All right, we're going to get Doris now.
We will in a moment. We're going to go to a break before then. Before then, though, I'd like to cover a couple of stories that are just crazy to me. Terrell Owens. Everybody knows the great wide receiver for the Eagles and the Cowboys, and he's been a badass for a long time. He has blown his most recent job. He has now been fired by himself. He was a co-owner of the team, and he has fired himself from the Indoor Football League. He was playing for the Wranglers in, the Wranglers were in, I don't know, some shitty city that can't afford a real team. And he's been let go.
He let himself go
because he no-showed at a children's hospital charity show.
Does that mean he was forced to resign or...
Both.
Okay, so...
They made him give up part of his ownership because part of his deal was staying there for the full season would give him a 10% ownership in the team. And he was forced to get out of there. It's pretty bad when you get fired from the same company that you own.
I mean, that sucks. But here's the question. The big question I want to know.
Yes.
I don't really care, but I'm going to fake like I do. When you are forced to resign and you put your money in something, is it the same as losing your home where you don't get any of the money you put in back?
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I would think he would get squat back, yeah.
That
because
sucks.
His real contribution there is his talent.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the notoriety that goes with his name.
Yeah, that's right. The idea that some people are going to come out and check him out. But once you fuck over like a kid's charity and you don't show up to something that's supposed to make sick kids feel better about themselves, that is the last straw of what a team can put up with. And he was doing good. I mean, he was leading the team in touchdowns, and he was picking up like a couple hundred yards a game. I mean, he was really doing well.
Right. He was trying to make a name for himself again and maybe get picked up.
This could be the wake-up call that he needs, but here's the thing about wake-up calls. If you get super successful and everyone's rooting for you and you're doing everything great and you screw up, if you don't let that be your wake-up call, then and you keep screwing up, then you're demoted in whatever industry you're in.
Hey, Carl, what did you just say to those people out there? When they walked away from you, I'm sorry, Michael, continue on. I'm going to get back
no,
to
I
you.
Don't, no, I'm, this is, I have, I'm faking opinions.
Okay,
go on.
Check this out. So Carl just walks away from them, and they both get these huge looks on their faces saying, what? What with giant big eyes?
I'll tell you later. I can't tell you. It's something like... I was asking whether we can bring up a certain subject, and she doesn't want it to. So
okay. Lisa.
He gets that face with every conversation he has with human beings, but this is the first time that anyone told him about it.
Oh, but then I also mentioned Grandma's Boy, and she's like, "Oh no," she said it was fine to talk about that. So I don't think it was that, but it was something else.
Yeah, why, she shouldn't be ashamed of that in any way.
Oh,
that's
no,
a
no,
badass.
No, movie. I said that you guys are because I was trying to.
I'm going to write Swartzen right now, seeing if there's anything he wants me to say.
No, I can't talk what issue, but there's a certain political issue that she's involved in sometimes, and I was asking permission. Can we talk about it? She said no.
Okay, fine.
So that's all.
Okay, well, I'll find out what it is off the air.
I hate all politics.
All of them?
Yeah, you know, it never goes well, politics.
But that's kind of like half the fun, you know, like laughing at people who think they're so great and they've got it all figured out. And then you get somebody like Barney Frank at the Dartmouth coronation speech this weekend. He says, oh, all you Dartmouth graduates, now you have a hoodie that you can wear that you won't get shot in.
You're like, as super interesting as all that is,
that's awesome.
Politically, I wouldn't call myself apolitical, but I try and steer clear of any kind of conversations that cause that kind of. I'm that a face. Man of leisure. I enjoy a conversation to go super well and charmingly, and you know, you meet a lady and you have a beverage and it's all that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah,
and that kind of stuff only leads to a lot of anger, and there's less chance at intercourse and everyone's less happy, you know. I know Carl thrives on any kind of political conflict. I know this, but I definitely try and stay clear
maybe,
of that.
Yeah, maybe that's what's blocking my dating life, the fact that I'm throwing up 20 outrageous, crazy ideas every day on Facebook.
Yeah, well, or what if you go on an actual date? I try and keep things pretty on the...
Oh, yeah. No, I don't talk about
this. Do you start getting into the Carl stuff?
On those all too rare occasions, now I don't get into the politics.
Oh, yeah, it's never going
to... Or actually, no, I did date somebody last summer who was a total...
Like, what are you talking about?
Was a total psychotic radical from the left. And yeah, but it made things interesting for a while. Then I found out later on she thought I was a total moron. So, yeah.
Well, hey, I'm not going to get into that one.
It's like I kind of like her better now.
Some terrible things I can say. Hey, we're going to pick up the next part of the interview from last summer with the team from the Blue Seal. This, once again, is Mike Donis, Marsha Cornier, and composer Aaron Sang as they talk about their project from last summer. And come out and check out their new project this year, which is The Adventures of Pete Winning. So check this out, and we'll be back on the other side with Doris Roberts.
Anything I do, I hope to be in 3D. I'm not kidding you. If you go on YouTube, type in Stereography Experiment Number 1. It's a brilliantly original title. and you'll find Marsha wrote the screenplay, Aaron wrote the score, and I directed it. And it's a quick thing. I kind of built a homemade 3D rig, and we shot it kind of to test things out and see, you know, how
I can use my glasses at home and watch them online.
Yeah, well, not the red and blue ones. Not the ones from the cereal box.
Yeah, I was going to ask which one.
The only ones that don't work are the kind from the theaters, because YouTube actually gets this little drop-down list, and you can pick whatever you want, or you can watch it too if you feel like it.
Well, if you are still coming up with the idea for that, may I introduce you to the people who were here before? Perhaps you can draw a 3D version of the sequel.
You know what? We have been invited to Texas. I'm not lying.
It's true. On the way here.
And that'll be the third one, because that's where you can use the three. It'll be Nicanor 3D. There you go. Exactly. That'll be great.
The third time's the charm.
So what's going to happen tonight if your actor wins for... Because he's not in California, correct?
No, he's not. He's back in Toronto with his son. Yes, he's a family man.
Does he have a speech that he's given you, or...
He did.
Do you have the speech with you?
No.
Oh, that's a ripoff.
I refuse to read it.
It's a bit much.
Yeah, we're not going to read it. Okay.
If you
want
to come, yeah, we can do it.
What's wrong with it?
Just that Mike, there's no way that Mike can read it himself, because it's all about how wonderful he is.
I guess that could be a little dicey to sit in the
I think
theory.
It might make me look
you know,
like
I'd be happy
cash.
To accept the award on his behalf and read that for you, so that we can all focus on you at that point.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If we can all focus on me, that's great.
Yeah. I got the tie on. I got the jeans, sure, but that's okay. I think I'd be able to do that.
All right, let's go.
We are going to make it out there after the show and get a chance, hopefully, to interview you after your wins. And
we're nominated. We haven't won yet. Let's just clear this up.
Hopefully get a chance to, you know, is the way I put it. And we do appreciate you guys coming over here. Also, thanks to the Naked Horror group for getting you guys over here, because you were the group that I wanted to get in the most. I really liked your handler, real good girl. I don't want to say your name on the air. Okay. I don't want to.
Sister Alex Kernier, PR extraordinaire.
Yeah, she did a good job. You guys owe her a big thanks for getting her in here, because she was real good. Once again, where can people find more information on the film?
You go to www.theblueSealMovie.com, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter.
Dig it. Can people actually buy the film there?
It's not for sale yet. This was our world premiere just yesterday, so we're going to hopefully play around the festival circuit and see what happens from there.
Well, we're not going to get into it quite yet, so you guys are going to have to listen later, because we do our movie reviews at the end, but I do have a more in-depth review with it. I don't really want to do it in front of you guys. So definitely listen to it later, you know. You'll get a chance to hear what we think. We do appreciate you coming in. Once again, where can people find individual information about you guys?
Again, well, you'll find me, Mike.Donis is my Facebook, or Mike Donis is my Twitter.
Yeah, and mine's Marsha Cornier. I'm on Facebook. It's Cornier.
Oh, good. I was going to ask you how you spell that, because...
it's a bizarre sort of...
And is Donis Donis or something else?
One N, Donis.
Okay, Donis.
And before I let this last guy introduce himself, I think that you are the difference maker in the film to me. Your musical score sets so much of the just the tone of everything, and I was whistling like the tune to myself all last night. I really dug it, man. So you got a good future in this.
Thank you very much,
Aaron.
Okay, my name's Aaron Sang. So people used to make fun of me. Aaron Sang a song, but don't be mistaken. There is a silent T in my last name, so it's TSANG. So I have a website, www.aaronsang.com. So that's AARON, T-S-A-N-G. And Aaron has two A's. A-A-R-O-N. Yeah.
It's not E-R-I-N. Don't do that.
This is
a man here.
Yeah. Well, go out there and enjoy your evening. This is your big night tonight. So,
It's your big night so far.
To checking in with you guys later and seeing how it all went.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys
so much for coming. All right, we'll be back after this commercial break.
With Cordell Pace, an awesome comic.
All right, dig it.
You are listening to Skid Row Studios. You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
You please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe. Okay.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio Radio with Jake Belcher and Brant Thoman.
The kings of internet radio.
You are right on time for Grand Theft Audio Radio. This is Jake Belcher.
And I'm Brant Thoman.
And let me set the scene for you. We got a packed studio here right now. We have a former co-host, current entertainment correspondent, Mr. Carl Kozlowski.
Hello.
Our special guest for the whole episode today. Can't believe we got him for a whole 2 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Gelbart.
2 hours?
Woo. I know, dude.
I was never told 2 hours.
Well, here we are. And I can't believe that we have our next guest in today. I've been watching her for such a long time, star of Christmas Vacation, Grandma's Boy. She's been on Remington Steele, and she's probably best known for Everybody Loves Raymond. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Doris Roberts.
Woo! Hooray!
Oh, nice. Thank you.
How you doing today?
Good. Really good.
Excellent. So we have you in town because you're working on a big charity show this Saturday night.
Yes, I put together a night of comedy every year for Children Affected by AIDS Foundation.
I really like this as I was reading through it. I've never heard of helping out I just never thought about them, I guess, like children who are orphaned from people who die of AIDS.
There are 16.6 million children that have been orphaned because of that.
Wow.
You mean worldwide, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. We're lessening the number in this country, thank goodness, by education and the help that we give them in medication. But it's epidemic in both India and Africa. And so now we've partnered with KCA, which is Keep a Child Alive, so that we can make it global and in our help. And so on this Saturday night, at the Saban Theater, which used to be the Wilshire Theater, which is one block east, am I correct? Yes, one block east of Doheny.
I'm in La Cienega, I believe.
But
it's one block east of La Cienega. I take the bus a lot, and it's right there.
You sure it's not Doheny?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, I think it is.
Okay. I'm
don't
sorry.
Screw this up.
Don't trust Carl.
I'm sorry.
Don't listen to him.
Good idea.
She caught on already. I'm sorry.
I'm quick, honey.
I'll get the address in a second.
Sorry about that.
I've got it right here. It's actually 8440 Wilshire Boulevard in Beverly Hills.
And what's the cross streets? Oh, just to have it exact.
That doesn't tell me that.
Okay. But it's in Beverly Hills, so it's not close to Los Angeles.
Okay. Sorry about that.
But this will be our 10th anniversary.
Wow.
We've raised over $2.5 million so far.
Who do you have on the show?
Oh, goodies. And it's still coming. The list is getting bigger. I have Ray Romano, my son of television. I have the other son, the big guy, Brad Garrett.
Wow.
I'm going to read all of it so I don't make any mistakes. Kathleen Madigan. Adav, Davidoff, and me, and the list, as I said, is getting larger.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
That's a good
lineup. Great group, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, absolutely fabulous. I mean, that is a superb lineup to go out and see. It must be so nice to have like your TV family to be able to step forward and help you with this type of stuff.
Sometimes it is. No. Yes, uh-huh. It is. No, those two boys are my sons.
It seems like I rarely even see Ray doing regular shows. He does so much help on so many other people's charity shows. Huge heart on him, there's no doubt.
Terrific guy, too. Terrific guy. I don't know why they canceled his show. I loved it.
Oh, you mean the TNT Men of a Certain Age?
That was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, they canned it after 2 years, and it was doing fine. They just, no explanation.
I could sort of tell there were problems when they were doing a second season and they divided the episodes up six, and then like 6 months later they did another six. And it's impossible to get momentum going when you're delaying your season by 6 months.
Yeah.
Well, I had something happen today. Not today. This season I was on a pilot, and Delta Burke was on, a whole bunch of wonderful people.
Oh, wow.
And we were supposed to shoot it on Wednesday night. And on Tuesday night, she fell and broke her ankle.
Oh.
And that was the end of that. They canceled the whole darn thing.
Wow. Something completely out of your control, completely out of, like, the audience's either
hand of
it
God.
Or not. That stings. But you can't be sad. Your career has been incredible. We start sitting around here at the beginning of the show, all bringing up our favorite, like, Doris Roberts roles, and we could still be doing it. I mean, it is incredible the amount of stuff you've done. Is there anything outside of, like, the Raymond and Remington Steele universe that you're particularly proudest of?
21 years on Broadway.
Wow.
Yeah, that is impressive. That is real talent.
Before I went to California. And I went there because Lily Tomlin saw me on Broadway in a Terrence McNally play called Bad Habits. And I won the Outer Critics Circle Award for that one. And she brought me out there. We did the Lily Tomlin Comedy Hour. We won all the Emmys, and they did not pick us up. They picked up Howard Cosell instead.
Wow, what a choice. That's terrible.
Is that not funny?
There wasn't enough money to pick up both of those for some reason. That's just amazing to me.
You'd think that most of America is way more into live theater than football and boxing and stuff.
Not really.
No, I know. I'm obviously kidding. But most people, I mean, your first love is theater, though, right?
Yeah.
You're considered one of the grand dams of the theater.
Well, because they can't cut you. They can't shoot the back of your head. It's all yours out there, which is great.
And you actually get some feedback back. I mean, when you do like so many movies, and I guess going to the sitcom world where you have a live studio audience, there's a bit of that, but it can't compare to actually getting to take someone on a 2-hour journey nonstop.
No, but you know, I lecture on a cruise line, on the Crystal Cruise Line, and it's interesting.
That sounds like a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, it is.
I bet.
I got a penthouse suite, my own butler.
Wow.
I can bring a friend.
Wow.
Oh, hell.
You know, see what happens after all this.
Yeah. I'm sitting actually physically closest, so our friendship's probably going to be the best, I think.
Brent, move him away.
Yeah. Mike, come over here for a second. I'm trading spots.
I was lecturing, and I opened it to the audience, and a woman came in on a walker, and she said, "I don't like your show."
Oh.
The audience started buzzing. And she went on and said, "And I don't like the way you depict that woman. Why do you do that?" And they were buzzing, and I waited for it to calm down. And I said, "Well, for two reasons, madam. One, it's called comedy. And two, they pay me a lot of money." So that night, I go to the karaoke bar, and in she comes with her walker. And she sings. I'm going to sing the way she did and the song she sang. People who like people are the luckiest people in the world. I jumped up. I said, "That's comedy."
But no one's paying her anything. That's
such a stop.
Yeah, you know, she's not immune to criticism just because she's not famous. She's still allowed, if she's going to put herself out there, she should be judged just like anybody.
Absolutely.
If you're going to be a critic, you have to accept it.
What topic do you lecture on the boats? I mean, is it like just generally about your career or something?
It's about
else?
Me and life. Oh, I start off by saying it's okay to look back, just don't stare. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can definitely waste a lot of your life just thinking too much about the past. But it's important. Just, you know, reflecting is important.
All right. And I read a review recently about that happiness is 50% of your DNA, and you have to supply the other 50%. So I always talk about that, and I said, you know, you choose to be happy.
That's true. Yeah. The world is what you make it. You know, it has to do with your opinion and your outlook on things. And you could have 10 people doing the exact same 10 things and all 10 of them have a different emotion
right,
with it.
Right. So that's what I talk about.
What?
And I tell fun stories.
Yeah. You got a million of them.
I do.
That makes it even more shocking that woman would come up to you and go, I don't like your show. It's just, it's so based in, like, after you've kind of educated or provided them with, like, a, you know, a really positive message to say, that's kind of shocking.
And the thing that was.
But the thing about playing Marie is, obviously, she's a flawed character, but if you don't have flaws, you have no conflict. I mean, this isn't a movie where you're going to have your arc or your resolution in 90 minutes. This, are, you know, your flaws as a character have to last 10 years.
I had a great time on Everybody Loves Raymond. I really did. And I liked everybody on the show. We all liked each other. But even more important, we trusted each other. No one was trying to do star turns. We were just coming in knowing our work and our lines and doing the best we can. And we did very well.
So one thing I always wondered is that the show has some of the funniest like put-downs and wisecracks. And yet there was always that... especially on the final episode, which I rewatched this morning, it showed Raymond for a split second had a complication after surgery, and everybody had a meltdown. And then, and then your character even ran over to his house in the middle of the night and jumped into bed while he's rolled around with his wife. And so it's like just my son. So there's always this heart to it. Also, how do they get that balance of knowing when to go? If it was going too far to the mean side, and how to keep it from being sappy.
They cast the right people.
Ooh,
and that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
Yep, it's all yeah, and it's lightning in a bottle. You know, you can't. Everyone tries to do it. Well, but we got a black guy, we got an Asian guy, and it either works or it doesn't. Yeah. It's a magical thing that just
I happens. Had never worked with Peter Boyle before.
Wow.
And the moment I came on that set, it was as if we knew each other for 45 years. And we would get more laughs by giving each other dirty looks than anything else. We had a great time together.
Yeah, it certainly seems like what Carl was talking about with the put-downs, it certainly seems what was really great about it is that when the put-downs came, they were funny, but they were funny because they were almost said almost lovingly. I mean, you could sense the love that was between the people as they put each other down. And I mean, not very many shows can capture that kind of chemistry between with all of the cast members.
It's interesting about, well, you know, comedy, that you can't be angry. You can be upset. You can be irritated. You can be a lot of things, but you can't be really angry because then they take it another way.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing Angie at Paramount, and they used to throw candy out into the audience, and we were doing a show, and we weren't getting any laughs, and I thought, something is wrong. So I looked out, and they're throwing this candy, and of course, it was an audience of blind people.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
So blind people are getting hit in the head with candy.
Terrible.
Wow.
That warm-up guy must have been fired for that one.
That was wild, but no. It was great. We'd had 9 years on that show. We'd still be on the air if our producer wanted to be on it, you know, but he made so much money he didn't need to work anymore.
Did I hear something about it's the most viewed show in Russia?
Oh, yes. Let me tell you about Russia. They wanted to do it. They didn't want us. They wanted to do their own casting and all.
Oh, yeah.
So the executive producer went over to talk to them, and he said, you must have an audience. An audience will laugh at the right time. They said, no. They said, no, you don't. It will enhance the show. You must do that. They said, no. And he kept arguing about it. And he said, why? This is their answer. We'd have to buy chairs.
Wow. You're not going to hear that in Hollywood.
It is the hit of Russia.
Yeah, I hear like number one over there.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what everybody likes to watch.
Originally, the person they thought would be right to replace me would be Cher.
What?
In Russia?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, that's ridiculous.
No, that did not. They brought on a little chubette finally, a little blonde chubette that looked like me.
Have you tried to watch some of the Russian version just to see what it was like?
Yes, and...
You don't like...
Don't worry, I don't think they're
so over the top. They don't know how to do it any other way.
Uh-huh.
And then there was one actor they found who was very good, but he belonged to the Russian Art Theater, or the National Theater. and the director of the National Theater would not let this actor go play a sitcom.
Wow. Well, they got to have standards, I guess. That's hilarious. Looking through some of your list of credits here, I can't believe that we have someone on the show that was on Love Boat. You know, I loved Love Boat. Like, I can't believe we have someone on who was on there.
You are our first Love Boat special guest star.
Oh my goodness!
Pretty stoked by that. And Remington Steele, I loved Remington Steele. Oh, that had to have been a great time.
Yeah, that was a great time. Yeah.
I mean, you still, can see that.
Still
show.
Friendly with them.
Oh, you are you?
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
With Pierce and Stephanie.
Now on the Love Boat, did you have a romance? Did your characters have? Did you have a romantic plot on your episodes? Did you fall in love with?
A little bit of a romantic part. I was there to get laughs.
Oh, okay. So you were maybe someone's mom, or
I can't remember that anymore. I've been so many moms. Oh my goodness, I have a list because I can't remember them all. But it's fun.
Mom on Alice, mom on Full House, and just show after show is of playing people's moms. Like, there must be like kind of a weird thing in your head that people look at you and they want you to be their mother.
They say the most wonderful things to me. They say, thank you. I love you. Thank you for the humor that you bring into my life. I go to bed with a smile on my face.
That's you couldn't ask for more than that in life.
No. Are you supposed to be that? I have no idea.
Are all of your teenage kids on your Christmas card list every year that you send out cards for the holidays?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. That'd be so much fun to get.
Now, do you remember a moment in your career where you became the mom? Was there a noticeable moment where you're like, okay, I'm not being asked to do this anymore. I'm now being asked to do everyone's mother. And how did that feel?
Well, they read over 110 women. For this part, most of my friends in New York were ready to kill me, but I just went in and this part had my name on it. I know those women. You know, I grew up with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what was fun, it was his Ray's parents are Italian, and of course Phil Rosenthal's are Jewish. So between the Jewish and the Italian, he's a German Jew, so that's very, very educated, and very. You know, and they, but the difference would be if they would be speaking, and that if you had both of them at the same time, the Jewish woman would say, "Don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. That's not good for your health." And be very educated and very informed. The Italian mother would say, "What the hell? What are you doing? What are you doing? Don't do that! My God, you're gonna, you know." So I had to put those two together.
Uh huh.
That's Marie Baron.
Did you actually have to do a lot of kind of internal planning to marry those two kinds of dynamics?
No, he got married up here.
Okay.
A lot of instinct is what you're saying, probably, right? Or
what?
Did you use, just came instinctively, or you thought it out on your own privately beforehand? Did you put a lot of preparation
into that? I put preparation into it, and I respond to it the first time I read it, and then I read it again, and I'll write little things next to it. I might write a person's name that she reminds me of, or close to something like that.
Did you guys have any say in, either individual lines or actual whole plots? Was it the type of show where you could say, this funny thing just happened to my family, and you could walk in and they'd create an episode about it? Or
Most of it, when I drove that car backwards and through the house, that happened to one of the writer's aunts.
Wow.
Wow.
Terrible. And then I can only imagine what the aunt feels like when Sheshi goes and sees that episode on TV, how that stuff gets dragged from their real life into it.
They love it. They love it because it makes them famous.
Uh-huh. Adorable. Okay, so my mom, who doesn't really like my show, she doesn't listen to it very often. She thinks that we're a little bit too crazy. I started telling her we're having you on, and she's like, "I remember her on Murder, She Wrote." She was finally impressed with me having a show for the first time. So I have to thank you for that.
Yeah, because he finally got the approval of his mom because of you.
That's a big one. I mean, she does not like the show at all, but when she remembered you and being on Murder, She Wrote, that actually made me important to her. So.
Well, Raymond's my dad's favorite show, so...
Is it?
Yeah, he's thrilled about today.
It's a good show, and it's in over 156 countries in the world.
Wow.
I was in India last year, and I was in a Buddhist temple. It was very dark, and three people came up to me and said, "We watch you every night."
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Can't escape it anywhere.
No, no. Well, but they always come to me with love.
Mm-hmm.
They say, "I love you."
And then you've kind of now launched into not a more raunchier side, but definitely Grandma's Boy. It was a seemingly a different type of role and character.
Well, wait till you see this one that's coming out the 29th of, this, of June.
Oh, what is it?
It's a Tyler Perry movie.
Wow, really?
Right.
I did not expect to hear that.
And it is called Madea's Witness Protection.
One of the Madea films, all right.
Well, that should be fun.
And I'll give you a little synopsis. It's Eugene Levy.
Yes.
Love him.
Huh?
Love him. I mean,
oh,
he's
isn't
great.
He fabulous?
Yeah.
And his wife and two children, and I'm his mother, and we're a Jewish family, and he's going to witness against the mafia, and they're worried that they're going to kill us all. So they think they're going to protect us by putting us in Madea's house.
Oh, my God.
So this Jewish family are living with Madea in his house, her house.
Wow. Sounds hysterical. I'm going. I'll go opening day to that.
Yeah. That sounds like that could be a big crossover for Tyler.
It's funny. It's funny as could be.
Did you do it in Atlanta? I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he's extraordinary. Tyler Perry is extraordinary. Writes it, directs it, edits it, plays three characters at the same time.
Wow.
And he operates, it's almost his own studio.
Like it is
he's
his own
completely
studio.
Independent of
totally.
The industry.
When you're on it, you think you're on the Paramount lot. He's got everything you could have and need on the set.
Wow,
he's
that's
terrific.
Amazing. So I wanted to ask, there was a story in the LA Times this Sunday, since we brought up like Grandma's Boy being a little more risque. They did a story, I don't know if you saw it, but it was about how TV sitcoms are suddenly using the V word, is how they put it, all the time. Have you noticed that the sitcom's getting crasser? Or I was just wondering what your thoughts of that were, since Raymond managed to have so much punch without relying on.
Well, you can remember if I did a sculpture.
Oh, that's right. That's awesome.
And it was a vagina.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And when we left the show and it was over, they asked me what I wanted to take home, and I took that home.
That was your keepsake, your memento?
Do you have it on a mantle?
Or I have it. Right, just outside of my living room.
Oh, my gosh.
And very well lit.
That's a nice conversation piece
right
there. Yeah.
I love the one of Peter looking at it and staring at it and saying, "I don't know what that is, but I like it."
Awesome. So I guess you're not easily surprised or whatever by what's on TV growing.
No.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
No.
It does seem pretty crazy, though, like TV does seem like it's getting crasser all the time.
There's a lot more sexual innuendos that are dropped throughout the comedies that I notice these days. And it's just like, is that really necessary? The stuff I grew up with, those were occasionally kind of dropped in there. But that was because those two characters, there might be something between them. But it's just like Mike and Molly. Those two characters are very wholesome. But the rest of the cast, it's just nothing but dirty sex talk practically. And it's just like, I like half of the show. It's the other half that I'm like, let's tone that down and make them characters that are funny, not just the one-liners that they're throwing out there.
Did anybody watch the Hemingway show on HBO?
Oh, no. Heard
Hemingway
about it.
And
Gellhorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, over the top, for sure.
What happened?
Well, that's the thing is, this is why network TV is getting dirtier, is because they're terrified now with the networks, because cable does anything they want. So now the networks are getting edgier and edgier.
And the young crowd is watching that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean it's getting better. Just edgy doesn't always mean it's good. No. There's high quality stuff. The Sopranos was
Oh, okay. When you said high quality, I was wondering what you were referring to.
Yeah.
That's on television today. Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of garbage on. There's no doubt. God. Is there any like secret things that you watch now, like that are kind of like not shameful, but like what's the word I'm looking for? Like
guilty pleasures
that you do enjoy.
Not alone, no.
Oh, well, all right.
Well,
so you can't be too guilty about it if you're watching it with other people. So it wouldn't be a guilty pleasure.
No.
It would be something to share with people.
But do you have a favorite show that's not guilty? Either way, no.
Not yet.
Okay.
Have you ever tried to sit down and watch, like, The Real Housewives of some random city or...
Not because a fan of the reality.
There's no chance a woman who came from the stage, 20 years in the stage, would embrace the world of reality television.
She just looks mortified.
She's shaking her head at us like, you idiots.
We're not into it either. We're just asking. Just letting it out.
Ruined a lot of things.
We're not fans of that.
It's amazing what's happening.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that the world is going in that direction. First of all, I don't know why I listen to the news. All you hear is about death. And all you hear about is someone being killed by somebody for no reason at all. Someone sitting in a car, pow, gone. Something's going on that's wrong.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to know what that is or how to cure it or whatever.
I think that's the big question, is how to cure it. Because, I mean, things happen wrong all the time. But do we have to sensationalize everything? Yeah. And it would seem that that is what our society has gotten very good at doing.
I watched, what is it? America Has Talent.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how I can tell this story and not embarrass myself. The man got on whose talent was...
I know what you're going to say. I saw that episode with the groin, with the kicking.
Oh, my gosh.
How do you explain that?
Someone was kicking him in the groin repeatedly, and he got moved through. Like, he got, you're amazing, and you're going to Las Vegas.
I don't know what you're going to do next week, but.
They hit him with a hammer.
Yes. And he took many kicks to the groin as well.
I was so glad he said he had two sons, because they're not going to be doing that too often.
There will be a third.
Yeah, there's no third kid coming.
What? That's a talent?
Amazingly,
and
yes.
And he won and is going to go to Vegas and do that on a stage in Vegas.
I mean, do you think that he would have gotten through if he hadn't been in front of somebody like a Howard Stern? Because, I mean, Howard Stern is one of the judges on there. Like, maybe the standards aren't quite as high as they were before.
Well, there was a group that was dancers, and Howard Stern got on stage and danced with them, and he was better than they were.
Yeah, I saw that. I think when it comes to getting kicked in the groin, that they may put you through to the next round just to keep things interesting, but they're not going to win. Like, and there's no way you're going to build a 90-minute Vegas show around that.
Yeah, that can't be the big winner at the end of the day.
No. They moved it through as a kind of a joke.
I saw a guy who came on there at the end of Monday night's episode that was, to me, he looked like the Black Carl. I mean, he came on with like this big sweater on. He's like this really, really obese black guy.
Oh, thank you.
And his whole thing was singing 1970s theme songs to television shows. And he did the Love Boat last night. As I'm looking through all this stuff, I'm like, it's a sign. That's all I got on that.
Right. Wow, that was the
it didn't lead
no
anywhere.
Question whatsoever. To that
didn't lead anywhere.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what my favorite part of that description was. The really, really obese guy. Thank you.
Well, I added two reallys. See, when it's done with love, that's what really counts.
Everybody hates Carl.
So when Everybody Hates Chris, when that show came up, did any of the cast members from Everybody Loves Raymond look at each other and say, hey, they're kind of copying our title?
Sure, but nothing was done about it.
Because I was always like, that totally is just ripping off that title for sure.
So there's no rivalry with like Chris Rock? You guys weren't playing pranks on each other or anything like that?
No, that'd be weird.
No. Like sabotaging each other's sets. I don't know.
Okay. Hey, we got to go to a quick break, and we'll be back on the other side. And we can give one more plug to the charity on the other side, and we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
Oh,
Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to 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 Skid Row Studios.
It was a pleasure to see you.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're
listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it with you.
Please do it with me.
Fuck that.
Can you please have sex with me?
At Skid Row Studios?
At Skid Row Studios.
Maybe.
I want to also write a little story and put the audio link up later today or tomorrow to Big Hollywood. It's a big website that gets a couple million readers. And so I just remembered this morning. This
city you are listening nice, to Grand great. Theft
yeah, that'll really
Radio
help
with Jake Belcher and Grant Thoman.
also.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio with the kings of internet radio, Jake Belcher, Brant Thoman, and Carl Kozlowski.
The event on Saturday.
Alrighty, daddy. We're back in with Grand Theft Audio Radio. This is Jake Belcher. We just had to lose Brant Thoman to his other job. But we are still live in studio with Carl Kozlowski, Michael Gelbart, and Doris Roberts. So, hey, before we get back into this, if you guys are enjoying yourselves today and like, you want to be able to help out on this, you can right now make an instant $10 donation by texting LOL to 90999. That all goes towards helping keep a child alive, and it is a great way to be able to show your appreciation for this and to be able to help out if you're somebody who cannot make it to Saturday Night's show. Carl, why don't you tell a little bit more about Saturday Night's show?
Yeah, Saturday Night's show is the 10th anniversary night of comedy. Doris has been the organizer and host of this the entire time, and every year she puts together some of the most amazing comics in the business. She's got Ray Romano, Brad Garrett, Kathleen Madigan, Brian Callen, Dove Davidoff, and tickets are, you can buy them by phone at 323-655-0111, and this raises money for a great cause, which is the Children Affected by AIDS Foundation.
What's that number again? Could you repeat that for
sure
me?
Sure thing. It's 323-655-0111, and this helps children who have been orphaned by AIDS through the Children Affected by AIDS Foundation and Keep a Child Alive.
That's going to be an amazing night of comedy. If I were in town that night, I'd be there.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. I've been to almost every one of them. So it's well worth it. And they keep it at a price that's, you know, they have a couple different levels. There's a VIP level and there's a regular price. And so if you got the bucks, you can meet all the stars. And otherwise, if you're on a little more on a budget, you can still see a great night of comedy and donate money to a great cause anyway.
I'm sending off my donation to the 90999 number right now.
And you don't have to donate $10 at 90999. You can donate more if you want to.
Well, I think you're putting that's on the how spot, but I got $10, so that's what I got.
Just letting people know out there.
They're just texting over and over.
They don't just have to donate 10. They can they can go 1,000.
It must be nice to have made it to a point in the world where you can help like this.
Yeah, it is. It is. And we're doing great work in this country about that because the numbers are lowering and diminishing, and that's wonderful through education, through help, through certainly medicine. There are medicines that could be. I don't know why countries like India and Africa are not doing more, because if it can be cured, I don't mean the disease of HIV can be cured, but you can prevent it from going from the mother to the child by medicine. Why wouldn't they do something about that?
Yeah.
Or do more than what they're doing, is what I'm saying.
It is confounding.
Unbelievable. But we're lowering the number in America, so that's something we can be proud of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even food is an important item, because through food, if they have food in their bellies, the medicine will work better. And if they're hungry and have no food, it won't work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have to chip in and find a way to do it.
Well, you're doing great work there. And a lot of the times, the people that you help aren't in a position where they can say thank you. I hope that you do hear it from people that they appreciate you putting your time towards such a noble effort.
I got to tell you, I get back so much from this. It's not. I'm very grateful that I've been doing it for, my goodness, 18 years now.
How much did you guys say you've raised over this time?
Oh, well, no, for this
foundation,
just $2.5 million.
Just $2.5 million.
No, we've raised something like CAF has raised something like $80 million over the years. Wow. 18 years. Yeah. I have to tell you about this movie I did.
Oh, sure.
The Madea movie?
Huh? Yeah.
The Madea one?
The Madea one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It's Tyler Perry, who's a genius and incredible. And it's called Madea's Witness Protection. And Eugene Levy, who's such a funny man, and he plays my son, and he has a wife and two children, but he's going to witness against the mafia. And so everybody's worried about this family, this lovely Jewish family, being killed by people because the mafia doesn't want them to want all that information to get out. So they put us into Medea's house. This lovely Jewish family are put away as a witness protection at Medea's house, and it is one of the funniest things I've ever seen, but even ever played in. So, and that opens the 29th of June all across the country.
I do love the Medea films. She's a very endearing character.
I have not seen them. This will be my first Medea experience. And yeah, I'll be there opening day. I guarantee that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tweet about it, as the kids say.
Good.
There you go.
That's great. Awesome. One thing is, you know, you guys did have a loss in the Everybody Loves Raymond family. Do you have any special memories of your time with Peter Boyle?
Every day I spent with him was a great day. I just adored being with him. We laughed. We had a great time together. We really looked like we'd been married for 45 years.
No doubt. Yeah. Well, I'd say one of the most believable on-screen marriages I've ever seen. Like, I would have thought you guys were together.
I loved it that we got thrown out of a retirement home.
Hilarious.
it was such fun to work with him. Yeah. A great man and totally different than what you'd expect. Very educated, caring, loving man. Loved to sing.
Really?
He was nothing like the characters he played.
Yeah, he was so gruff.
I hope he sang better than a young Frankenstein.
I know. Or a grouchy thing. No, he was sweet and educated and loved, committed, had two children, two girls, wonderful and lovely wife. I just adored him, and I miss him a lot.
Yeah.
Well, he passed away like less than a year after the finale. It just seemed like...
He had the disease a couple of years that he worked with it. And he came to me and he said, "Shall I tell them that I'm ill?" I said, "No. They'll treat you like a dying man, and that's not who you are." Huh. And so he listened to me, and it was great because they didn't know it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't make it easier for him. Or anything. It gave him strength to go on, I think.
That's beautiful.
You know, I just adored them. I loved our dirty looks to each other.
No doubt, that's better than anybody could have ever written. You know, like the chemistry between two people, you can't put that on a page.
I got to be honest. Sometimes on these sitcoms, when two actors that are really strong look at each other for a really long period of time, the anticipation of what they're going to say is actually funnier than anything that can be written afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah,
no doubt. Doris, we really appreciate your time today. I want to go over this one more time. This is Saturday night, June 2nd. This is the my thing just slipped.
Say
down.
That.
This is the Laugh for a Cause at the 10th Annual Night of Comedy, benefiting the Children Affected by AIDS Foundation and Keep a Child Alive. You can get tickets at, you can call 323-655-0111, or you can make an instant $10 donation by texting LOL to 90999. Your charges are going to appear on your next wireless bill. All purchases must be made by your account holder. Make sure that you're actually the person that has the phone. And we really appreciate your time so very much. Also, go check out Doris this month in Tyler Perry's new Witness Protection. What date was that again?
June 29th.
June 29th.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much, Doris.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Okay.
We'll be back with the second half of this interview from the Blue Seal guys, so stick around.
Right. Earlier we had on the cast and crew from the Blue Seal.
And
I said I didn't really want to do the review with them here because there's something that seems to me kind of artistically wrong or ethically wrong of doing it while they were here. So, hey, anyways, the Blue Seal. I got to catch it this week. It is a way better movie than I thought it was going to be. Everything, many other things I saw at the Action on Film Festival were very amateurish. But the cinematography was very well done. There were such great little gems of lines in it. Marcia Cornier, I'm probably spelled it wrong. Just the little gems of lines that she would write were really perfect. I mean, just pitch perfect. It was very, very good. The main actor in it, guy, his character is, his name was John Kraft, and that's also his name in real life, so it was pretty easy to remember. He was kind of on the stoic side, as you kind of expect from your action heroes, but he had a different type of energy than I'm used to seeing out of somebody. It was more along the lines of like a real guy who was in a bad situation, and it's just an engrossing film. And I highly recommend everybody go out of the way to find it when it does get released. I'm sure that we'll get updates onto it because I think people should see it. It's a really nice slice of life looking at Canada, and it's a whole bunch of scenery that I've never seen before.
So you're saying the acting wasn't very cliche when it comes to
not at all, as an actor? Yeah, not at all.
I mean, as an action actor, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, it was more along the lines of Adrian Brody's take in Predator, where it's just like a regular person as opposed to a Schwarzenegger, big, tough guy who's in this awful situation, but you know he's so badass, you know he's going to beat it anyways.
Right.
I really felt it many times. I didn't know how the story was going to go. I didn't see how the they're going to get to the finish of it, but they wrapped everything up in good little bows, and I highly recommend it. Once again, that is The Blue Seal, and we will be letting you know, I'm sure, in the future how to check it out, because this is the type of film that people should be watching and checking out and supporting people who are just getting going in their careers and making it happen.
You are listening to Skid Row Studios.
You're 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 listening to Skid Row Studios.
I'm not doing it.
Please do it with me.
Go, babe.
Please have sex with me at Skid Row Studios.
I'm gonna be in the Ontario. You're going to just relax.
You are listening to Grand Theft Audio Radio with Jake Belcher and Brent Thoman.
Alrighty, Daddy, you're back on Grand Theft Audio Radio. This is the only Grand Theft Audio Radio boy in the house. This is Jake Belcher. But I do have our entertainment correspondent,
Carl Kozlowski,
and our guest for today,
Michael Gelbarth.
All right. So, Carl, before we have to finish up here today, why don't you tell our listeners about your show this Friday night?
Yes, I'm hosting another edition of the Three Stories Show out at the Westside Comedy Theater in Santa Monica.
Who do you have this month?
Well, we've got Carlos Kotkin, who we've had on the show before with his hilarious book, Please God, Let It Be Herpes. And then I also have Jessica Williamson, who has been a Moth Grand Slam contestant, which is a big deal in the storytelling world in L.A., and Mark Miller, who is a L.A. Times national humor columnist and has also been in a million – Sit and Spin, the best show in town other than mine for storytelling, and should be great. And Jake Belcher will be making his storytelling debut at the show.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy, yeah, from Grand Theft Audio.
Yeah, I think I'm going to tell the story about the first time I saw my dad's tits. So, my dad was a transvestite.
Well, he was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
So, the first time I saw my dad's tits, I'm going to give that story.
Sure, sure. That with Doris. That would have been a good episode.
Yeah, I'm sure she would have fucking loved that.
Yeah. I have a question about your dad being a transvestite.
Yeah.
Was he, all right, is he heterosexual?
No.
Because this is the, but he had a child anyway.
Yes. He started off that way. Then he got insanely jealous of women, thinking that their life was way too easy and that you should just, absorb all of your stuff off of a man.
Did it make you uncomfortable? Did it take a while for you to?
Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
Until like the whole advent of like the Oprah show and all of those other things where it became a regular thing in America, it was terrible. Like Oprah really helped me by having those types of episodes.
Springer.
Wow.
Springer, Oprah, what was his name? Richard Bay. I mean, he was the one that really had the transvestites on all the time.
So yeah.
He helped out my psyche a lot.
Wow, that's amazing. I never knew this.
So crazy.
Well, because I learn everything I know about you on the air. So every single thing we talk about is right here. So
it goes, whoa.
Yeah. If you want the collected conversations between me and Jake, just listen to back back shows.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Then, yeah. And